Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
From New York City, the only city in America, it's the show that invented news. This is The Daily Show with your host, D.L. Hughley.
D.O. Hughley, and welcome to The Daily Show. Of course, between me and Leslie and Wanda, this is starting to look a lot like BET, I tell you that. Do not be shocked if you see those diabetes commercials. You know? Ozempic! Black people love that song. You can have one foot, you still dancing that song. You don't even care. All right, of course, we have a lot that we need to talk about. So we're going to get right to it. So I'm sure many of you heard by now that a young black man in Memphis was pulled over by the police. And we all saw how it went down.
For the first time, we are seeing the violent arrest of Tyree Nichols. What began as a traffic stop quickly turned violent, as captured on multiple videos released tonight by the city of Memphis.
Officers are seen pulling Nichols out of the car.
I'm just trying to go home.
They use pepper spray and deploy a taser during a struggle. Then for roughly 3 minutes, officers are seen repeatedly kicking and punching Nichols while he was handcuffed.
As Nichols lay on the ground, bloodied and bruised, several minutes go by without any of the officers administering first aid. Nichols died in the hospital 3 days later.
Is it a shocking video? Yes.
Shocking. You know who wasn't shocked by that? Black people. I think that is a word we should thought about lexicon. Because the one thing we were not, you just see black people sitting around, can you believe they beat the shit out of another nigga on TV? Can you believe that? Because it's pretty commonplace for us. The only people who are probably shocked by this are people who haven't been paying attention. But for us, that's just like a flashback. So those videos are like so commonplace. It's hard to be shocked. That's like watching a porno and saying, he gonna stick that where? Ain't no way in hell that's gonna fit. I mean, I don't know. I'm just making a point. I don't watch porno. Let's stick with the story, all right? It is not shopping to black people, because that is probably every black parent's nightmare. It's like, that's why we train our children to deal with police. We act like they going on safari or something. Like, don't make a sudden noise. Don't make any sudden moves. Don't smile. Don't run. So you can't be shocked when the media spent a whole week prepping us for the video. They told us how violent it was going to be. To be real, that video got more promo than I did for this show. It's like, I haven't seen a TV show that anticipated since the remake of Night Court. They wasn't playing around. It was like they were rolling out a new movie release, brought to you from the people that bought you George Floyd and Rodney King. I can tell you what I did find shocking was how fast those cops got arrested. Yeah. Now, they got arrested so fast, they didn't even give us time to riot. I'm like, damn, what am I gonna do with this, all this gasoline? I gotta pour it back in the lawnmower. Because, usually it takes a considerable amount of time more. Like, usually when they tell us a cop got indicted, a reporter is wiping tear gas out her eyes. So it's... and it's just interesting because they did get arrested fast. And I just... These cops got arrested so fast, I gotta wonder, why did... there's something about them... that looks fast arrest worthy. Like, I can't put my finger on it, but I want to arrest them myself. I don't. I don't know, maybe they get their haircut at the same place. I don't know. I can tell you what did scare me is that no one could tell us what Tyree could have done to stop this from happening. I mean, usually you hear people saying he should have followed orders, but they gave him 71 different orders in 13 minutes. So not even Wendy's can turn an order around that goddamn place. And then they gave orders that didn't make any sense, like telling him get on the ground when he was already on the ground. Like, I don't know how they do it in Memphis, but where I'm from, the ground is as low as you can go. That's it. but, you know, it is a complex issue, and I know it helps me whenever I'm delving into a complex issue that affects black people and I want an expert opinion. What I do is I turn to Fox News. I do. That's... I learned how to make gumbo watching that show, too, so it's... it's the reason that I found out why cops do bad things in the first place. And it's apparently because people are so mean to them.
This is a direct result of is all this defund the police stuff, right?
And if you vilify the cops, you'll get less people wanting to be cops.
These endless wars on police departments now, they have dissuaded a lot of good people from becoming police officers. That's a fact. They've had recruitment problems and they've had retention problems. You can look at the data like I can. And what happens is you wind up getting stuck, plain and simple, with just bad guys.
You would think he got his ass whipped, right? Like, But the great thing about it is I got a good guy from Fox to say they are bad cops. I got him to agree with Antifa, see? I've been here one day, and I'm changing shit already. It's going great. but there is one guy on Fox News, and this dude came up with something that I got to tell you, I really did not see it coming.
Looked like gang violence to me. It looked like what young black men do when they're supervised by a single black woman. And that's what they got going on in the Memphis Police Department. They've elected some or put some black woman in charge of the police force. And we're getting the same kind of chaos and disunity and violence that we see in a lot of these cities that are run by single mothers.
What is he talking about? what is he? So it is single black mothers that are the problem. So wait a minute. All of these cops, all of them, they had single black mothers too? And by the way, those are the images that came up when I Googled good cops. If Jason Whitlock proves anything, is that you do not have to be white to hate black people. And I can understand, how can we expect Jason to see the plight of black people when this dude can't even see his own dick? So... I'm D.L. Hughley. You know I was gonna do a dick joke on Comedy Central. You need to stop it. All right. right, for more on this story, I'm going to be joined by Roy Wood Jr. What can you... Hello.
Just disagree with the man. You had to bring this dick into it, then come to me.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Hey, let's not let a dick come between us. It's crazy. What can you tell me about the police officer that committed this attack?
Here's the thing, D.L. First and foremost, they're not just any police officers. They were actually part of an elite unit within the department with a special focus on violent crime.
That
elite unit.
That was elite.
Yeah, yeah. It was elite. It was elite. And like, and the whole idea of an elite unit is already kind of weird, right? Like, shouldn't the whole police force already be elite? I mean, you already got guns. Like, you know, it's like, this is like when you get on the plane and the flight attendant tell you, oh, well, you're lucky today. This is one of our elite pilots. Well, who the hell? Who's flying this shit before, ma'am? But there's something even weirder about this elite unit, and that's in the name of this elite unit. They were actually called the Scorpions.
Oh, wow.
The Scorpion, the acronym. You know, the police, they love the acronyms. Right. And Scorpion stands for Street Crimes Operations to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods. Scorpion.
Okay.
And I don't know about you, Dia, but look, as a rule of thumb, no police unit should be named after a Mortal Kombat character.
Yeah. I agree. Agreed.
You can't name no unit Scorpion, because once you give them a name like Scorpion, it don't matter what they're even there for. They're going to be violent with the shit. You can have a police unit that only does paperwork, but if you call them Scorpions, they're going to be swooping in and whooping ass with W-2 forms.
Agreed.
Anyway.
Agreed.
And that's the other thing, man. It's not that hard for the police to name a unit after something other than a deadly animal. You ain't got to name every unit after a deadly animal. It's easy. Just watch this, watch this. Securing neighborhoods alongside kind enforcement. That's peaceful.
Ain't that Snake?
Don't interrupt me. I'm still thinking. Give me a second. What about this one? What about this one? This is peaceful. Yeah. Securing homes and rescuing kids with orderly, lawful functionality. That's good.
Shark Wolf.
Ah, damn. Okay. It's tougher than I thought. Forget acronyms. We can do one. We can do a police unit that's peaceful, kind. Gentle enforcement needs officers carefully inspecting downtown elements.
Don't you want us me to finish the week, man? That's genocide.
Okay, all right, well then just forget the names. Here's an idea, dear. Here's an idea. Police got all these elite units.
Mm-hmm.
How about the police form an elite unit that's specifically trained to not kill black people? That's the unit. It's an all-out unit, bro. Talking 6 months of boot camp, learning how to identify black people, identify when our hands are up, identifying what complying looks like, all of it. I bet you could do that. If you did all of that, you could drop the killings of black people by as much as 20%. 20%.
Just 20%.
Hey, that's elite to me. We got to start somewhere.
Thank you so much, Roy. Roy Wood Jr., everybody. All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk to the attorney representing Tyreek Nichols' family. So do not go away.
Jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
With Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to The Daily Show. My first guest is an attorney who's representing the family of Tyree Nichols. Please put your hands together for Ben Crump. How are you?
I'm good, DL. Good to see you,
brother. How you doing, Frat? You good?
I'm good, Frat, other than this situation.
Out of all the times, like, usually you call me, I think it's Tuesday, and whenever I hear from you, I know it's bad news. Like, you never call, you won a lotto or had a baby shower or nothing like that. It's always... But you told me about it because my driver happened to be Tyree's stepfather, and he had told me about it previously. And so it struck me differently because I know Rodney, and I remember when he moved to Memphis. And I knew that you were on the case, so I was certain that something positive would happen. Do you think that the fact that the officers were arrested so swiftly is an indicator of things that are getting better, or that just we got five black people, so we're going to arrest them real fast?
You know, that's an interesting question, D.L. Hughley, but I think when you look at the fact that they are black officers, it seems to be that this moved awfully swiftly. What do I mean?
Curiously
the police
swiftly.
Chief said...
Very fast. Very fast.
Very fast. The police chief, Davis, said it was important that they take swift action, that they move swiftly to justice, DL. She said that because this video was so clear that the community needed to see that. And so I said to myself, they got fired, arrested, and charged in less than 20 days. So this is the blueprint going forward, D.L. Hughley. They cannot say anymore to us whether the cop is black or white. When you see them on video committing a crime, using excessive force against us, that it takes 6 months, that it take a year. No, you can't tell us that anymore because we're going to say, you remember those five black police officers in Memphis? Yeah. Y'all arrested them immediately.
What I do find interesting is that I know that you have tried to, you know, do what you can in terms of police reform. But let me tell you, Congressman Jim Jordan, he said on, I think, Meet the Press, that he's not sure that any law, any training, or any reform could have stopped what happened to Tyree Nichols. So that sounds like a setup to not do anything. I'm tired of hearing about rotten apples. We got to start looking at the trees and the soil that the trees grow on. If the premise is already nothing could have stopped that, that sounds a lot like their approach on guns, is we might just keep everything the same because nothing will stop it.
Yeah. You know, DL, it really is troubling when they continue to see all this evidence that we have a problem with the culture of policing in America.
Sure, sure.
One of the questions I was often asked was, well, they're black officers. Are you surprised what they did? And I said, no, because the race of the police officer isn't the determining factor of whether they're going to commit excessive use of force, but it is the race of the victim. And it's often black and brown people who bear the brunt of police brutality. I mean, dear, we don't see videos of our white brothers and sisters who are unarmed facing this kind of excessive use of force. I'm waiting to see those videos because how often, DL, have we seen, you know, Eric Garner in New York get choked, the first I Can't Breathe case, then Alton Sterling down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, then Pamela Turner, the sister outside of Houston who was having a mental health crisis and the police killed her, and Laquan McDonald.
What is their incentive
walking
to stop?
Walking away in Chicago, got shot 16 times.
But what is their incentive to stop? Because what happens is police officers who kill black people get a paid vacation. Then they come back. They have GoFundMe accounts. Then they say police departments need to be retrained so they get more money. So there's no real incentive to make substantive change when nothing really severe. And what police they'll tend to do is they'll get rid of the police officers and say, now everything, we can start at ground zero, everything's changed. And I don't see anything that has changed that is so remarkable that it would lead me to believe that these are going to be changes that are resonant.
Well, DL, we're making some progress. We need to make a lot more, but we're making some progress because you know what a deterrent to them killing us unjustly is? As Reverend Al and I always talk about, if they have to do the perp walk, if they're being convicted and sent to prison, like Derek Chauvin and those officers who killed George Floyd, if we have more police officers saying that, well, just like you think about white people, you de-escalate, fine, because you know if you shoot a white person in the back, oh, you going to prison. Mm-hmm. But if you shoot a black person in the back, maybe not, because it's like a cliche almost, DL. Black men running away and they say, oh, I felt in fear of my life. How can you feel in fear of your life when the person running away from you?
You know what's funny? It's hilarious. I say this all the time. The most dangerous place for black people to live is in the imagination of white people. It is the most dangerous. That's the most dangerous address to have. You, one of the things that you'll always
have
an
invention. I gotta say this, D.L. Isn't it funny how conspicuously silent the police union is?
Yeah. Hey, man, you took the words out of my mouth. I'm hosting the show, not you, Ben. I want to make this point. Every time you have a conversation about policing, invariably somebody will feel the need to go, but not all policemen are bad. We're talking about the ones that are. I wish that somebody would make that point on the other side, that not all black people are bad. Like, that's no one ever says... I would never make the accusation that all of anything is bad, but people, when they say black-on-black crime or high crime areas, they are really painting everybody with one broad brush and saying these people can't be trusted, they live that same way. So even the mentality that we speak about these things has to change.
Yeah, and we have to quit making excuses for police killing us unjustifiably. I hear so many of my white friends say, well, if they would only comply. Tyre Nichols couldn't have been more compliant.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about how they try to justify blaming the victim when we see video after video after video. Hey, how about we say the person who actually killed the person is to blame?
Yeah.
And let's stop it there.
Yeah. You're right. They have a weird notion of compliance because I didn't see any of that on January 6th. I didn't think any of them were compliant. I didn't see any of that. So, but... Let me just... I kid around with you a lot, but I will say this. It's the first time I've ever talked to you that I got scared. You sounded so exhausted. I've never heard a black man sound so weary, like just exhausted. So you got to make sure that you're around to make sure you're all right.
Hey, no, thank you, DL. And I appreciate the prayers, brother. I will say this. What I am praying for, Tyre Nichols' mother has been dealing with this tragedy with such grace. She said, I believe that my son was sent for an assignment, and now he's back up in heaven with God because he's completed that assignment. Yeah. She said, that's the only way I can cope with this tragedy. It's the only way I can keep waking up. And she said, because I have to believe a greater good is going to happen for this senseless death of my son. And so I am praying that the President Biden, who we talked to, will listen to us when we say, let's marshal the United States Senate back in to session and reconvene with Senator Schumer and Senator Booker, and then let's get Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee to bring the bill back up in the House of Representatives, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, and let's keep fighting because we cannot let her prayers go in vain that a greater good has to come out of this. And I know they're going to say, well, they're not going to do anything, but we have to strike a match rather than curse the darkness. We got to go to the mayor, do it on the local level. We got to do it with the state level. If we can't get to the federal government, we got to win the battles we can, because every battle we win might just save your child's life.
There you go, Ben. There you go, Brent. I am a... You epitomize perseverance. I'm proud of you, man. You make me so proud. Attorney Ben Crump.
Much love, friend. Much love.
All right, we're going to take a really quick break, and we're going to be right back after this.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. It's such a great audience. Y'all must be union. Jesus. my next two guests. They have collaborated on a new book for young readers called How to Be a Young Anti-Racist. Won't you please welcome Dr. Ibrahim X. Kendi and Nick Stone. So, how to be a young anti-racist, that means you're already banned in Florida. So, it's funny when we talk about race, because we live in a country that the Congress and Senate voted for Juneteenth bill. But we're the same nation that doesn't want to talk about slavery. They'll have Martin Luther King and Robert E. Lee Day on the same days. So, I think when it comes to racism, I think that a lot of people believe that if they're not actively saying the N-word or doing or saying bigoted things, that means they're not racist. So how can we start a conversation about being anti-racist when you're not quite sure how to quantify racism? We are, but I don't think a lot of people are.
And I think that's the very point. Because if you're not doing anything to challenge all of the injustice and all of the inequity in our society, then what happens? It persists.
Sure.
So therefore, you're reinforcing it. So therefore, you're being racist. And so we're encouraging people to actively try to dismantle this structure, including young people.
But what is their incentive? Like, what would they be incentive? Nick, what is their, if this system is working for you or not, it doesn't cause you any ruffles, you can sleep at night, why would you want to change a system that seems to be going just as you intended?
But is it actually working for you?
Well,
right?
A lot of people, yeah.
It
yeah.
seems
not me.
To be,
I'm
right? It clearly is not
I'm
working for
Ray
either
Holmes,
one of
but
us.
I'm talking about, like.
Yes. I think, for me, it's all about children, right? Like, even though this is a system that might seem like it's working for you, the world is actively changing. If your children are not prepared to live in a world and move through a world that have people that are different from them in positions of power, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, but then they try to remake the world. You see that. Literally, we're a nation that is run by the Flintstones and the Jetsons. And the Flintstones are winning. You have to understand that I don't believe a lot of people, for instance, I don't believe white people, a lot of white people are actively racist. But I do believe that the notions of white supremacists, they don't agree with their methods, but they agree with their goal, which is to keep white people in charge. Mm-hmm. And so if that is the premise, then what incentive, seriously, would there be to make these changes that only destabilize what you know works for you?
I think one of the things we've been showing in studying racism is that it's actually harming white people too. It's not harming them at the level it's harming people of color, but there are actually white people who are dying of police violence. They're not dying at the level of black and brown people, but more white people are dying of police violence in this country than other countries. More white people are incarcerated in this country than other countries. More white people are struggling to vote in this country compared to other countries. There were 5 million about poor whites in 1860 whose poverty was directly connected to the enslavement of black people.
But I think a lot of white people don't get this. When you poor, you a nigga too. You are. You are.
You are.
You are. You are. You are. You are. Like, they, I don't think people understand that generally what hurts me hurts you, what is good for me is good for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that, but there is that thing and where you know, people will give their last dime to keep things a certain way, as long as it hurts you. Like, look at what happened with the Obamacare Act. A lot of those people in those poor states are being hurt by that, but they don't care as long as you are.
Yeah.
And but the sense of optimism is in what you said earlier, children. Because in children you have, not mine's there, you know, they're a whole different thing, but But in our children, we can see the potential of things that we hope to never, that we hope we could realize but probably never will. So that is an angle, I think, that is probably substantive.
Yeah, I think when it comes to children, I have two of my own, mm-hmm. and it's important for me that they enter a world that they feel empowered to change, mm-hmm. which is why we wrote this book, right? So Dr. Kendi wrote his memoir years ago, and I latched onto it, slid into his DMs, and asked if I could do a young reader's right. version, because right. it's important that young people have the tools. I get so many kids who are asking, well, what do I do? How do I help? What do I change? How can I get into this fight and do something about it? And so creating a text like How to Be a Young Anti-Racist, we're giving them information where they're learning these definitions, they're learning what racism
give me an example of what racism actually is.
So racism is a system of ideas. So you have racist ideas, sure. and they are basically, they're made to keep inequities going,
right.
right? So the whole purpose of a book like How to Be a Young Anti-Racist is to give young people terms right. that we can all agree on, that way we know what we're standing against.
Like what?
Like racism. Having a term, a definition for racism helps them see, okay, this is what we're trying to fight.
Because mm-hmm. one of the things that happens is people who have historically been racist refuse to define that term.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Because it allows them to exonerate themselves right. consistently and constantly. And even young people, therefore, don't know what it is. So they can't even assess themselves and guide themselves.
How would they know? We have a lot of people who are raised by people who moved out of places that black people were moving into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? That was a predicate. We're going to move out of places that black people are moving into. But those are the people who have the conversation with the people who are now having the conversation with the people. So if they don't think the thing that they did was racist, that's a level of obliviousness that you can't quite quantify.
It is. And indeed, the heartbeat of being racist is denial. And,
yeah.
and this denial is consistent and constant and insidious.
You know, it does give me hope when I see people, like, your book beat my book on the New York Times bestseller list. Sorry. Get the off the set. No, I'm just kidding. And it's interesting because it came along at a time, and you had written it a good while back, but it resurfaced when the George Floyd protest was coming on. There really seemed a moment, and there seemed these inflection points when we can generally, well, people are really open to listen, but the problem is, it's so fast. Mm-hmm. You can only get attention so fast, and then we're on to the next thing. And I think that's not even a purposeful. I think it's just a function of how we live. But if you could say a substantive thing that people could do every day, like in practice, every day, where they could be an example, because every time somebody says something that somebody deems hurtful, they automatically stop. I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm tired of this already. We were a slave for 400 years, but Jim Crow been around 50 years. Like, trying to not be a slave has not, we haven't had to put as much elbow grease into that. But books like this and having conversations where people don't turn off are really the crux of what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And for young people, it's so much easier to, like it is to learn a language. It's got to be easier to learn a love language, right? It's got to be easier
yeah.
to learn.
Yeah.
And what do I, because I get angry.
Yeah.
Like when black people do it, it's called anger. When white people do it, it's called righteous indignation. But it's really hard to come from a place of anger and try to teach somebody something.
Yeah.
So I think, at least on me, the onus has to be lowering the temperature and listening, right?
Yeah, and I mean, look, the book is really all about first turning inward. I think part of the issue is that we don't do a good job of humanizing ourselves. We don't give ourselves the space to be angry. We don't give ourselves the space to be sad. We don't give ourselves the space to have unpopular opinions, right? Like we do,
I do.
We're all, you do. But even that, you know, the fact that you're like, I'm angry and I don't know how I feel about being angry. Like it makes sense that we're mm-hmm. angry. Mm-hmm. So taking the time to look inward and figure out the beauty of How to Be an Anti-Racist, the adult book, was that you get Ibram's whole story where he is very open about mm-hmm. the racist ideas that he was holding. Mm-hmm. So taking that and distilling it down for young people so that they can see, oh dang, this thing that I'm thinking is probably mm-hmm. a little racist. We had an event last night in Atlanta, and our teen moderator, that was the first question she asked us. She was like, I read the book, and it pointed out to me all of the ways that I have racist ideas, mm-hmm. and it made me feel a way yeah. about myself. What am I supposed to do? So then having that self-compassion where you can see, okay, yes, I am a product of a racist environment. I probably have some racist ideas. Mm-hmm. Taking the time to give yourself some grace you'll give other people some grace too. And that's how we kind of like get to a point where we're working together
at least,
to dismantle things.
At least hearing each other.
Yeah.
Each other.
Yeah.
The thing that's so frustrating for me is our stories tend to start in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like we were something before this. And our stories seem to start in the middle. So, and it's just like even what's going on in Florida, you don't even want us to learn our history. Like there was a time when enslaved people couldn't learn, and now it's illegal for us to learn about enslaved people.
Yeah.
So, it just...
You spitting, boy.
And you would have heard that had you not beat me on the New York Times bestseller list. And I think that we have a lot to learn about how things work and to really have constructive conversations, because it's so much more fulfilling to me to shout at somebody, but it doesn't really accomplish anything. And I'm really very proud that you write books like this. And I think the younger you start, I mean, you got to not be an anti-racist baby. You have the babies, too? You have the baby?
Yeah, we got the anti-racist babies.
What the is a baby going to do? Like,
hey, look, you learn it somewhere. You either learn to love people or you learn to hate them, right? Like,
I don't want chocolate milk. I want... How to be a young anti-racist and the young anti-racist workbook are available now. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back after this.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but...
Amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to super fans, to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods too by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a super fan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world,
it's Fire Nation time, Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, that is our show for tonight. But before you go, please consider supporting the Boris Lawrence Henson Foundation. They're a nonprofit that improves mental health services for Black communities. If you want to support them and their work, please donate to the link below.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Vyadaris.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.